Well, welcome. Thank you for sparing time to come and see us. I have here a crutch, and for a couple of weeks I learned what it was like to use one of these, because when I was 13 years old, I was trying to prove to my twin sister that I could walk along a 20-foot-high harbour wall with my eyes shut, and I couldn't, and I fell off the wall, and I spent 2 weeks in Truro Hospital, ruined the family holiday. In fact, I remember saying to my twin sister, I said, "Why didn't you shout?" And she said, "I didn't think you really had your eyes shut." I said, "How dare you impeach my integrity? Of course I had my eyes shut." So it was her fault I was in hospital. She said nothing. And I've forgiven her. Anyway, the question is Christianity a crutch? And the question I want to ask is, how do you define one of these? How do you define a crutch? And I want to say that there are three things that define a crutch. One, it's artificial. It's an artificial means of support. The reason that I needed a crutch was my leg wasn't working properly. I think my brain wasn't either. But anyway, it was artificial. Secondly, it's only required if there's something wrong with you. Now, that's the issue. Normal, healthy people don't need a crutch. And thirdly, it makes life easier in the short term. So the doctor at Truro Hospital said, look, get rid of these crutches as soon as you can, but you'll need it for the moment. But, you know, you'll need it because your leg isn't working properly. So how do you define it? Artificial. Only required if something wrong with you, makes life easier in the short term. And this whole idea that Christianity's a crutch was really first proposed by Sigmund Freud in his book, The Future of an Illusion, in which he said, actually, the Christian idea of God as a father is in fact an imaginary crutch. When we grow up and we still long for our parents' protection, but actually they're gone. So we long for their care, their protection, their comfort, and subconsciously, this is what Freud said, we project those needs onto a heavenly father in the sky. So to Freud, Christianity was definitely wish fulfillment. It was definitely a hangover from childhood dependency. It was a psychological crutch. And he'd have said, yeah, it is artificial. It's for the gullible. He'd have said, yeah, it's only required by those people who can't grow up. And he'd have said, yes, it's escapist, it makes life easier as people say their prayers to some imaginary father figure. Well, I want to just try and take on those three issues, and if you can have the bit of paper in front of you, the orange bit of paper, that would be great as we just try and address them. So first of all, is Christianity artificial? Is it an artificial support? In other words, is it wishful thinking? Or, ladies and gentlemen, is it true? You see, if it's true, then it can't be imaginary. And the truth of the Christian faith depends on who Jesus Christ is. And that's precisely the question that's being debated here in front of us in these first couple of verses. I wonder if I can read them to you. Once when Jesus was praying in private and his disciples were with him, he asked them, who do the crowd say I am? They replied, some say John the Baptist, others say Elijah, still others one of the prophets of long ago who has come back to life. But what about you, he asked. Who do you say I am? Peter answered, the Christ of God. You know, it's perfectly possible to be with somebody and not know who they are. I don't know why they did this, but quite a few years ago, my mother was at a wedding in Ireland, and for some reason, they sat her next to Christa Burr, the singer, but she had no idea who he was. She thinks modern music's Beethoven. So she sat next to him, and she said, what do you do? He said, I'm a singer. She said, are you a tenor or a bass? He said, actually, I'm a pop singer. She said, really? She said, that must be quite difficult financially. He said, well, actually, it's okay. She said, does your wife work? Do you have a day job? He said, no, my records pay. And she said, oh, I'm glad to hear that. She came back to England. She said, Rika, I sat next to a man called Hamburger or De Burger. I said, Mother, Chris De Burr. And I went and got a cassette, not one of mine, one of my sister's. And I said, is that him? She said, that's the man. I said, Mother, he's worth millions. She said, I'm so glad to hear that. He looked dreadfully undernourished. You see, she was with him, but she didn't know who he was. Now, that's the same that's going on here. The crowds are debating it, but the issue is this man, Jesus Christ, is no ordinary man. So people had heard about the extraordinary circumstances of his birth, where the sky lit up at night. They'd heard about how as a young boy, at 12 years old, he'd gone to the temple and he had asked questions that amazed people with their depth and insight. They'd heard about how he'd gone up to a paralyzed man and said, get up and walk. And actually the sinews and bones and muscles were knitted together. They'd seen him confront religious hypocrites and put them in their place, fearlessly expose them, not care about their death threats, get on with what he was doing. They'd seen him cure what was the ancient equivalent of AIDS, an incurable disease, leprosy. They'd heard the finest sermon ever preached from his lips, the Sermon on the Mount, and they'd then seen him living out. So in the Sermon on the Mount, he said, love your enemies, pray for those who persecute you, as he was being murdered.
Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing.
No hypocrite. They'd heard how he said to a storm, quiet, be still, and it was flattened. And to a dead girl, get up, and she'd got up. And they knew he wasn't an ordinary man. And you know what's interesting? Is that even the non-Christian sources like Josephus talk about the fact he did miracles. The debate was where his power came from. No one doubted he did these things. There was too much evidence. It's just, where did he get the power? So they're saying, well, you must be Elijah, John the Baptist, one of the prophets. They want an explanation. And eventually Jesus says to Peter, what about you? Who do you say I am? And when we're working out whether Christianity is artificial or not, that is exactly the question that every one of us needs to ask ourselves. And to hear Jesus ask us, who do you think he is? And I'm saying that actually there is loads of evidence in the life, death and resurrection of Jesus. So I'm saying this guy was murdered on Good Friday, but on Easter Day rose again, and that's historically checkable. There's loads of evidence that says actually he is the Christ, the Son of God. And if he is the Christ, the Son of God, this is the big issue, then God has sent his Son to meet him. And if we reject his Son, that's a very serious thing. For we get each breath from him. It's a massive question. And Jago will mention, of course, Christianity Explored, when you can work that one out. But can I say again, if it's true that Christ rose from the dead, then Christianity isn't a crutch, because it's not artificial, it's true. So that's a massive issue, and can I flag it for you? But secondly, it's only required if there's something wrong with you. And I wonder if we can look down. So I guess what that's saying there is Christianity is only for especially needy people. In other words, it's not needed by ordinary, healthy people. Well, let's have a look at verses 21, 22 and try and answer that question if we can. Jesus strictly warned them not to tell this to anyone. And he said, the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders, chief priests and teachers of the law. And he must be killed and on the third day rise to life. Now, the Greek word for must there is necessary for certain great ends. In other words, Jesus is standing up and he is saying, having been revealed as the Christ, God's King in God's world, he's saying, I have got to be rejected, I've got to rise, because we need him to do that. Must. I must do it. You need me to do it. In other words, every single one of us has a need for what he's going to do on Good Friday and Easter Day. Now, I guess this is the issue. Well, are we speaking here about universal needs, or is this something that only applies to weak people? Well, the mere fact that we need something, and something will satisfy that need, doesn't make that something a crutch. Let me give you an example. Food. I mean, we need food. Does that make it a crutch? No. If we don't have it, we get hungry. We die. I'll take longer than you, but nevertheless, that's what happens. Water. If we don't have water for about 3 days, we die. Air. 5 minutes, we die. That doesn't make those things a crutch. Now, you're then saying to me, but Rico, those things, if you don't have them, you die physically. If you don't have Christianity, you don't die physically. Well, let's move this on a level. Ladies and gentlemen, what about the emotional level? Is love a crutch? We all need love. Does that make it a crutch? If we don't have love, we'll become emotionally crippled. We'll be broken. There's a remarkable girl, Rachel, who's at this church, and she worked and took over a Romanian children's orphanage. And I remember her saying to me, she said, when I first walked into this orphanage, she said, it was for AIDS babies. She said, I walked in and there were 40 babies in a room and it was deadly silence. Not one was crying, because they knew, those babies that were HIV positive, that whether they cried or didn't cry, no one would come because no one loved them. And can you imagine the dysfunction that that produced? And I want to say, you know, if I'm not loved, I'll go under. That doesn't make love a crutch. By the way, don't put your arms around me after this because I've said that. I'm far too screwed up for you to do that. But nevertheless, but what about, you know, what is it in Christianity? Here's the issue that we all need, as we need food, water, air and love. Well, Christianity satisfies a deep spiritual need in my soul. And it's great you've got made time to do this in the middle of a busy day, to think about your soul. That's fundamental. So, for example, I need hope, ladies and gentlemen, in the face of death. I've shown you this before. This is my best friend from university's funeral card. I buried him 18 months ago. His three kids were over the top of the coffin. There I was, standing over there with the three lined up. I need hope in the face of my best friend's death. I'm unashamed to say that. Is that it? Do I never see him again? I need hope as I stand at the graveside and I say the words from Psalm 103. As for man, his days are like grass. He flourishes like a flower of the field. My friend did flourish. The wind blows its place and remembers it no more. I need hope in the face of death. quite a few years ago now, I was speaking in Oxford, and the Blue Boat came. They all walked in this talk. I was giving a little Christian talk, and one of the number was Matthew Pinsent. It was many years ago. And I remember thinking, I've got nothing to say to these guys. They were sort of tall, very fit. They weren't arrogant, but there was a tremendous physical presence about them and a confidence. Well, I spoke on the Friday night. On the Monday morning, one of their number had a heart attack in the boat. They got him onto the bank. He died on the bank. Doesn't matter what point we're at in life, can I tell you, our lives are very frail, and I need hope in the face of that frailty. I do. But secondly, it's not I just don't need hope. But, you know, the second thing I need is I need forgiveness. Because my experience in life is that guilt is real. So I don't know what you make of guilt. And I guess you can try and blame it on social conditioning. You can try and erase it. You can try and get yourself reprogrammed in therapy. You can blame it on your parents. But guilt is real. We feel guilty because there are things that we're rightly feeling guilty about that are rightly on our conscience. This is Kingsley Amis, 10 days before he died, in an interview in the Daily Telegraph. He said this: "One of Christianity's great advantages is that it offers an explanation for sin. I haven't got one. Christianity has got one enormous thing right, original sin. For one of the great benefits of organized religion is that you can be forgiven your sins, which must be a wonderful thing." The interviewer then said that he paused for a long time and bowed his head and said, "I mean, I carry my sins around with me. There's no one there to forgive them." 10 days before he died. And I need forgiveness. And secondly, on this forgiveness issue, I don't just need forgiveness. I need to be able to forgive other people. Because I don't know if you found this out, but if you don't pardon someone, you become their prisoner. Psychologically, isn't that true? The anger that comes if you're unable to do that. If I can't forgive people, I'm imprisoned by them. How do I get forgiveness? How do I forgive other people? I find being part of humanity means I have to do both. How do I do it? Well, can I say, as we look back at the verse, can you see verse 21 there, 22, that Jesus answers both those issues. When it comes to forgiveness, he says he must be killed. It's necessary that I die. In other words, he's saying on Good Friday I die and I pay in death and blood so that you can be forgiven by God and you can then have the resources to forgive other people. So we always teach our marriage couples here at All Souls. We always say Colossians 3 verse 13, which is a verse in one of Paul's letters, bear with one another and forgive whatever grievances you have against each other. Why? Why do that? Forgive as the Lord forgave you. You see, as I look at the cross, I'm forgiven so much, I can give that gift of forgiveness away. And I need it myself. I remember keeping this diary as a schoolboy. I really kept it because I thought I was such a great bloke, I owed it to the world to record my life. And I can remember the overwhelming guilt, and I was staggered by the day I understood forgiveness. It was like taking off a heavy rucksack. I need forgiveness. That's Good Friday. And on Easter Day, in the light of my friend's death, I need hope. So I'm saying Christ rose from the dead, and because he got through death himself, he can get me through. And that means that the door of death has been opened. The coffin is not an exitless box. Could that be true? Could it be true that I can see my loved ones again because Christ died and rose again, and that's the promise that that could happen to me? Well, I don't know where you are, but if you call hope and forgiveness needing a crutch, that's fine. But I need it, and it's right at the center of my soul, and I can't think about doing life without those things. I can't bear the 3 a.m. loneliness of not having those things, just being a piece of DNA stranded in the universe without them. Well, lastly, let me draw to a close. It makes life easier in the short term. Well, what do you make of this as we hear that? It makes life easier in the short term. Have a look at verse 23. Do you reckon this is easy? Then he said to them all, "If anyone would come after me, he must deny himself, take up his cross daily, and follow me." Do you know, it's very interesting when it comes to how many people are committed Christians in this country, because they reckon about 20 million people in Britain actually believe Jesus is the Son of God, about 40% of the population. And yet there are under 8% that go to church and far fewer than that that are committed Christians. And my question is, why? Well, do you think it's got anything to do with just how difficult that word deny is? Deny himself. So unequivocally, ladies and gentlemen, can I say to you that the first question one has to ask if one's a Christian is not, am I happy or am I fulfilled, but how do I serve? I mean, I do this hopelessly, but it's meant to be Christ first, others second, yourself last. And if you're contemplating the Christian faith unequivocally, can I say to you, the epitaph you must long for on your grave is this, the servant of all. Jesus came as a servant to die. and he calls his followers to serve. And my question is whether actually this self-denial thing is actually something that's caused a lot of people to say no, because it's too difficult, not too easy. And Aldous Huxley said this. He said, in his old age, at the end of his life, for myself, the philosophy of meaninglessness was essentially an instrument of liberation, sexual and political. In other words, it suited him very well to believe in nothing because it enabled him to behave as he pleased politically and sexually. In other words, for him, actually it was a crutch, his atheism. It enabled him to do what he liked, and he acknowledged that. At least he had the honesty to do it. I spent 25 years in rugby circles, and time and again the rugby guys say, Rico, I know it's true, but it's too inconvenient. So I don't know what you make of this deny yourself. Actually, life is counterintuitive though, isn't it? As we give our lives away, we find them. Could it be that actually the happiest people we know are the most selfless? But that's the first thing. I don't think it's easy, deny yourself. It certainly isn't, whatever it does mean, saying no to self. Secondly, actually, no to secrecy. Can we look down verse 26? If anyone's ashamed of me and my words, the Son of Man will be ashamed of him when he comes in his glory and in the glory of the holy angels. You know, this issue that Christianity is a crutch in terms of standing as a Christian could only be asked in the West. In so many parts of the world, actually, Christians are martyred. In fact, have a guess how many Christians you think were martyred last year. Have a guess. How many do you think died for their faith if this is a crutch? Have a guess. Just bung a number in your head. Can I tell you what it is, the number? The real number? 167,000. One Christian died for their faith every 20 seconds. That's how many died. 167,000. And I got that figure from Regent's College Vancouver and All Nations College Ware. So to say to those people, well, it's a crutch, it's just ridiculous. I mean, if it's a crutch and you're going to die, just throw it away. And this has happened right through Christian history. There's the Martyrs of Lyon, which is an account in the Eusebius collection of Christian suffering, early Christian history. But Caesar declared over Blondina Sanctus and a boy Ponticus, age 15, torture them until they die or until they deny Christ. That's not easy. So it's saying no to self. It's saying no to secrecy, and that's not easy. So I don't think it's a crutch, whatever it is. Well, let me close there and just say these three things. And I just hope they'll cause some food for thought. And thank you again for coming. But number one, Christianity is not a crutch because it's true. It's not artificial, but that's a thing to be debated. Secondly, it's not a crutch because it's not just needed by a few weak people. It's needed by all of us because when it comes to me, I desperately need forgiveness and I desperately need hope. But again, those things have got to be based on truth. If they're not true, then let's bin them. I mean, they've got to be true, so I've got to find that out. And faith, in fact, is three things. It's information, it's assent to that information, and it's trust. But many here may need to debate the information. And thirdly, it's not a crutch because it's not the easy way out. It's tough. But it is the way you know God. And the most challenging and exhilarating thing I've known in life is to try and walk with Jesus Christ and follow him. No one does it hopefully. But I want to say this, that in terms of a final analogy, I was trying to think about what it's like being Christian. It's like this. It's like skiing and someone saying, right, Rico, you've been on the nursery slopes, but if you're going to become a Christian, come up onto the black runs. You're on the black runs. It's terrifying at times, but it's extremely exhilarating. And it's an amazing thing to know God's power to try and live the Christian life and to know the security of the beginning and end of life and indeed to know the love of the church family. And above all, the symbol of Christianity, you see, ladies and gentlemen, is not a crutch. Actually, it's a cross. It's a cross. And Jesus says, who do you say I am? And if you reply the Christ of God, then he says, follow me. Follow me. Thank you for listening.